not the presentations, but just to check about toxins and detox and all that kind of stuff. I know there's pills taking, there's prevention, there's this and that. If maybe they could speak on that one. Thank you.
Okay, we'll just to assist him, we'll talk about that at the end of your, if you can then your response on the members have asked. Some are comments, but yeah. thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for the questions. I'm going to address a few that I think were directed at me. One of them was, is there evidence of transmission of HIV to infants through breastfeeding? And yes, there is, if the mother does not have a suppressed viral load. So the mother needs a suppressed viral load, and under those circumstances, exclusive breastfeeding is recommended, and it's the guideline. And this combination of suppressed viral load and breastfeeding prevents HIV, and it also prevents other causes of infant death. So at the moment, the guidelines are for mother on ARVs, suppressed viral load, exclusive breastfeeding. So what drives the infant HIV at 18 months, the 4.3% that was observed, this is most likely breastfeeding with a high viral load. So it's important to promote maternal ALT. And also it's important for mothers to have access and understand their CD4 count and their viral load, and to have that relationship with health workers and knowledge. And it's important when they move from one health service to another that that gets communicated. Okay, I've dealt with the infant feeding guidelines. Then what have we done to communicate the community health worker investment case to government? It was commissioned by government, and it has been prevented and shared with the Departments of Health and Treasury. So we've given it to them and spoken to them about it. Then how good are home-based carers? I can't answer that now, but the investment case estimates of their effect at keeping patients out of hospital was based on research evidence, and I could look into that research evidence to see whether it comes from South Africa or elsewhere. And what is the budget for home-based care? I also can't answer that now, but I would have to look into that. And then lastly, there was a question about DMPA and the...
Okay, so with regards to the DMPA question, I think we just have to go back a little bit in history. In 2012, when the WHO technical team met and they actually had a finding when they were reviewing a whole lot of observational studies around the effect of DMPA and HIV acquisition. And I think from that came a set of guidelines where they prescribed, please, for our high-risk women, we need to be cautious, we need to give them extra preventative measures, we need to make sure that they're using condoms, et cetera, et cetera. And the National Department of Health also included this in a box in the National Contraception Guidelines. So as a result, this has been an ongoing issue, but I think we need clarity on whether DMPA actually is a causative agent in terms of HIV acquisition. So the ECHO study, which is currently ongoing in South Africa currently, is actually doing a randomized controlled trial looking at the effect of DMPA, the implant, Jadal, and the IUCD. So they're comparing whether there are different rates of HIV acquisition in women who use those different contraceptive methods. So once that study results are available, we'll have clarity on that issue.
Sorry, DMPA in food?
Is, it's Depo, otherwise called medroxyprogesterone. It's a contraception. It's called a 3-month, 3-injection.
Yeah.
Everybody knows it as that.
Yeah. No, we know.
Yeah.
That's,
sorry.
But it's just That's the problem with the academics. They always use abbreviations and assume that everybody knows. So I'm raising that
three
with the benefit of other people that they're just, yeah.
Okay, so the other question on the vaccine and how often the vaccine should be given. So we look at the vaccine durability. So currently the vaccine research is actually in its, what I call the infancy stage. So we're not actually far along in terms of working out what exactly the dose is to get a durable dose. So how effective and for how long that effect lasts. So we're still actually playing around with different formulations to make sure we're trying to get to a longer effect. But what we're currently doing is that with regards to the study design, currently we're giving a dose at enrollment, which is month one, and we're giving four doses thereafter. So a participant is getting five doses of a vaccine every quarter. And we are assessing the vaccine efficacy at month 12, at month 18, and then month 24. And already from the early results in HVTN-100, we've seen that the vaccine efficacy is waning after a certain time. So we're giving boosters already. We've implemented that in the study design as part B. So really, this is work in progress. We will come up with a vaccine that has the longest durability with a different dosage. So it's going to take some time, though. The last question... Was it about the collection of the toxins and the AE? Must answer that now.
I think we should. Was that which was that, I thought that was in relation to alcohol. Was it the toxins?
In relation to the pill taking, tablet HIV.
ART toxin. Do you want to answer?
Okay, that? I'll
yes,
just try.
Yes,
okay, so all clinical research held in South Africa or in the world. Actually, we have a detailed collection of any reaction to any drug we're testing, right from the studies in animal phase, which is your preclinical data, to phase one, which is your early safety, to phase two, where we're collecting detailed safety. So by the time we come to a phase three trial, like in a vaccine or PrEP, we have accumulated all the possible side effects that are going to happen, and we include it in the investigator's brochure eventually. But we make sure that in a phase three safety trials, we either exclude the people who will be vulnerable to that particular event or toxicity, or we design the trial such that we have detailed safety profiling, so we look at certain bloods at every visit, make sure we're not having an indication of a toxicity that's going to happen. So if an ART is raised or a certain liver function test is done and we see concern, then we stop the drugs. So we have that kind of safety monitoring in every single clinical trial, which is very detailed. And the monitoring of that is to a central point, so it collects all the data.
Thanks. Ashley, can I ask you to...
Thanks, Rachel. Thanks, Chair. The question around gang violence and the MRC portfolio around that, I think that's a really important area of work. Of course, it's highly specialized. And as things stand, the kind of intervention that we work, intervention work that we do, doesn't target gangsterism directly. There is some work taking place with partners in the sector. There's a number of smaller NGOs that work and I think connect with groups like NICRO. And so there is an active group that's working on this. The intervention work that the violence injury and peace research unit does is primarily targeting communities. We have a community base out in Strand and then out in Johannesburg, and the focus of that is around strengthening community relationships. And so it could involve vulnerable groups. We have a focus on young men in particular. The emphasis there is around nurturing, around strengthening relationships, around conflict resolution, and so on. There is a lot of gangsterism in those communities, but the specific focus is on strengthening the entire community fabric. And so, not to take away that it is an important area, but it's not the specialization that we have in LAPRO. I'll just continue with the rest. There was a question on... I'll go to Burns first. The question around around the prevalence and the importance of acid burn, I think is really important. We haven't picked up how important it is, and it might be. I indicated earlier that the prevalence of violent attacks using some kind of burns is quite high. It's about 20% in the Western Cape. That was based on a hospital study. There's one other study that I was involved in based in Mpumalanga, where the rate was lower, about 10%. We, at that point, did not detect, well, it didn't come through that acid was important, but we're also on the verge of a slightly bigger study. It's involved 17 hospitals, and it's based on a data set that the now closed Paraffin Safety Association developed. So there is a possibility that we could pick up something there. My intuition is that it's relatively small if it does exist. But I think we must pick it up. In other settings, it's of course a dominant form of attack, for example, in Southeast Asia. I don't think it's become one here yet, but it's something that we need to keep an eye on. And so we'll keep an eye on for that. You did ask about the provincial focus. We're aware. It depends where the resources are based. But I think, of course, with the new child centres that's just been opened up, we have a really good hospital that we will connect with as we proceed further. In terms of the advice that our delegation would offer around the road traffic injury problem, it is such a huge problem, and of course globally. And the work that we've done until this point has been very, very useful, I think. I think we see the uptake through the Department of Transport in particular. We sit on a technical committee that advises the transport, and a lot of the uptake has been around the enforcement measures. And so when you see the DOT or the affiliated work through Arrive Alive and so on, when they generate the campaigns, then we are part of that consultation process in terms of the vulnerable groups. Vulnerable groups, pedestrians have been acknowledged. But there's more that needs to happen. There's implications for this work in terms of structural issues. And this discussion is taking place in a bigger kind of forum. We know that much of South Africa walks. For example, with respect to children, it's even higher. I think it's 70 or 80% of children that walk quite a distance. And that's one vulnerable population. The other vulnerable population are just people that have to use the roads. And so there's implications there about pathways, about infrastructure. The work that my colleague did, Dr. Sukai, pointed out how much traffic mortality takes place in low-income areas. And it's precisely with these pedestrians who are vulnerable that get knocked down. It'll take a little while for an ambulance to get there and so on. There's a bigger discussion around the infrastructure, and there's also a bigger discussion around the mass transport system, which is seen as a counter to that. And so it's a discussion, I think, that it's the importance of ensuring that enforcement agencies do what they do is important, but it's not enough. And that is why we believe that the rates actually haven't come down, because the structural changes that need to take place are just going to take a much longer time. And so unfortunately, it's unlikely that we'll reach the decade of action goal. But some of the structural discussion is being implemented. And so perhaps not by 2020, but thereafter, we're hoping that there will be spin-offs from the work that's taking place. I can't recall if there's any other question that I might have. Someone asked about
the pedestrian, the impact of the, in terms of the road, you focus on motorists. You didn't then focus, in terms of the usage of alcohol, you didn't then focus on the pedestrians. What are we as pedestrians contributing in terms of consuming alcohol, the drink and walk?
And the impact on the budget of the Department of Health.
nitrate. Thanks, Chair. The impact on the budget, there have been some budget recalculations, but through Department of Transport, not in terms of the health costs. I can't think if there is research. There might well be. A colleague that led a lot of this has gone to WHO just in the last year. And so there may have been, because I would expect that it's massive. With 250,000 crashes a year, you I think in terms of hospital beds, and bedtime is probably quite significant. In terms of the messaging that should go to around alcohol and how pedestrians are expected to deal with it is quite a tricky one, I think. I think the message is quite clear around driving. But in terms of alcohol consumption and how one deals with this appropriately, I think it's something that we need to think about. It's a bit of a bind for a pedestrian if you're walking home from a late night drink and then a pavement. There's been a little bit of work applied to young children in terms of what are these clothes called? The visibility aids. There was a little campaign through one of the shopping groups that, for example, sewed these things into school bags. And so if you walk at night, this thing shines. And I think there was an effort to get some of it into school blazers, reflective clothing. That's what it is. And perhaps it's something that can be applied to adults, but I must say I haven't thought through how one would sell that to an adult. So, yeah. Thank you, Jim.
Sorry, I just want to answer most of the other questions. Actually, Debbie, there's one for you. Why don't you do that?
The difficult question about the contribution played by foreign nationals in both violence and HIV, we will have to check, but we're not aware of any research that has been done in the MRC on that. But what I can share with you is that we have just launched an initiative to strengthen the demographic and health surveillance sites. South Africa's got three that are currently in rural areas where communities are under surveillance and in-depth population research gets done. And the one in Asian Court area, Bushbuck Ridge, was set up 25 years ago and has shown provided a lot of data about the Mozambican refugees who settled in South Africa and their situation and their health. And I would be hopeful that the new initiative, which is to harmonize the three that we've got, plus create two new ones in urban settings, eThekwini and Johannesburg, and possibly two others, that initiative would create the platform where in a community you can do the in-depth population research that might start to tell us a bit more about roles or contributions. So we can check if there's anything that we know currently, but it needs the not documented folk are not keen to talk to researchers. You've got to build up relationships.
The MRC has got an alcohol, tobacco and other drug research unit, and I think if they were present they would have more to add to the issue of alcohol and pedestrians, because it is recognised to be a very important part of alcohol related road traffic fatalities. But it also links to the whole question of fatalities on the road. And I think a key issue that needs to be considered in terms of urban planning is the fact that traffic calming measures tend to get put in place in middle class areas after middle class people make a lot of noise about traffic risks, But if you go into the areas where people are not middle class and live, there are no traffic calming measures on normal urban roads, speed bumps and these things that make you drive in sort of squiggly lines and things. And I think that's something that's a very, we would say from our point of view, it's a very important planning question. And it's not just about protecting people so that they can walk home when they're drunk, but has enormous impact on children, the way that people speed up and down roads, and particularly narrow suburban roads with houses on each side where it's easy for children to run into traffic. And, you know, I think one of the issues raised by all of our work on violence, as well as much of the work on our HIV, is really the focus on the fact that this really is multi-sectoral work, and it's not just something where the solutions lie within the health sector, even though we're the people who count the deaths and count the illnesses and pick up the pieces when people come into health facilities and hospitals. That's one of our big challenges in terms of prevention. In just to answer the other questions, there was a question about how much external donor funding we have. And this varies enormously. If I can tell you about the units that are present here, the Gender and Health Unit is the most highly funded unit and currently has contracts in excess of 300 million rands, which are external donor funded contracts. The HIV Prevention Unit has contracts of about 150 million that are external funded. Health Systems has contracts which are just under 50 million. The Burden of Disease Unit, you have about 6 or 7 million, and VICPRU has about a million. So it varies enormously, and all of the units obviously receive core funding from the MRC, and our external donors take a wide range of different forms. But obviously we've shown you very big portfolios of work, and the MRC doesn't have anything like enough money from the Treasury to be able to cover the types of the range of portfolios of work that we've talked to you about. So just on some of the other violent questions, there were reflections about our society, what's wrong with our communities. I think that these are very good questions, and they relate to our social norms. And essentially, we have social norms on gender, which I've particularly talked to you about. And we also have related and overlapping social, but highly connected social norms on the use of violence. The social normative nature of the use of violence in South Africa has obviously been fed to a large extent by the very violent past of this country. And so that's something that at the moment we have been unable to get away from. But because the use of violence in so many daily interactions like child rearing, violence at schools, violence between partners, violence between neighbours, violence in community process, because all of these become so normalised, we replicate the use of violence. And it is incredibly important that we take as a national objective trying to build a violence-free society. And we need to actually focus on reducing every one of these forms of violences, because we have to understand that they're all interrelated. And if, to the extent that people feel within communities that certain forms of violence at times can be justified, that in itself feeds the use of other forms of violence, as well as traumatizing people who are directly involved. And I've shown that it is very clearly related to gender relations, and in particular constructions of masculinities that lead to a ready use of violence, but it is by no means only men who use violence. And as you mentioned, some women are violent and abusive. Our child abuse deaths unfortunately show that it's more likely to be a mother who is the perpetrator. We know that in terms of beating children at home, it's more likely to be a mother. Obviously, lots of female teachers beat children in schools. And within intimate relationships, women often do have are involved in certain forms of violence, although a lot of that is retaliatory violence. And we also know that women are involved in violence amongst other women, or hitting their neighbours, for example. So we do really need to again address violence as it's manifest amongst men and women. The issue of class is really interesting, because the research on rape shows that because male sexual entitlement is such an important driver of rape, that actually a lot of men with power use their power to sexually abuse women. And in fact, there is a real, you know, in terms of our research on perpetration in South Africa, showed that actually it was more powerful men that actually were more likely to perpetrate. And we even saw that in our research amongst adolescents in the Eastern Cape, where in the kind of former Transkei area, where most of the people we were working with were fairly low income, albeit sort of within a range of low income, but the wealthiest of those within that were the most likely to rape. So there's a very major issue around abuse of power, and men who have power abuse it to abuse women sexually. In terms of other forms of violence, there, although men who are upper class men and men who are powerful may be very violent, there does tend to be much more violence associated with poverty. And so intimate partner violence is associated with poverty. But one of the key issues there is women's poverty as well, and the fact that women are just have less social power if they're less well educated and they don't have money, and they're more vulnerable. And so addressing women's vulnerability is incredibly important, because when women can stand up for themselves against men, they are much less likely to get abused. And that's one of the key things that we address in interventions. And then there was a question about have we presented our criminal justice work? Well, the work was commissioned by the NPA, and we conducted it with SAPS. And so we first presented all of the findings back to them. And there's recently been a two-day Department of Justice conference last week that actually focused very much on our research. So we have a very close relationship with them. And we also have a very close relationship with DBE. And in fact, we're also working on rape in the higher education space and working with the Department of Higher Education and Training. And we're supporting the development of a policy framework for addressing sexual and gender-based violence on campuses at the moment, too.
You know, I don't want us to end this meeting with only a few people, but there are three areas which I want to contest, and I want you to go back and look into this. One, again, in your responses, you are very silent on well class, fine class in both black and white. I must not get an impression that in the white communities, high people that have got money, and in fact there are also poor communities in the white area. So the research that is forever focusing on the former Transkei, go to Pretoria where there are poor white communities, but go to Summerstrand in PE, go to Plattekloof, where there is a concentration of, go to Durban, high class Indian community, go to PE, high class colored community, so that when we talk, don't give me an impression that it's black poor people that are subjected to this. No, must not get that. So I would, not now, you won't respond now. Two, it can't be that violent women that are violent and abusive is because they're retaliating. No. They are women that are violent and abusive to men. They are. I'm saying this because both men and women are victims of patriarchy. votes. And therefore, we must not, as women, give an impression that, yes, that's why I said it may be a friction, but we want to empower a boy, a girl child, and a boy child. My grandson must know, my granddaughter must know that, because there's a difference between, I don't want to open another debate, but we must develop a society, a community that must understand that when we talk about gender relations, both of them must respect one another. If my daughter is married to Honorable Ndaba's son, my daughter must understand that there is respect. Okay? She must also respect, but it does not mean that they must be abusive to one another. Because we know, I'm confident, I'm saying this without any fear or favor. I have laid out, I have treated men that have been, not because those women were retaliated. So there are those that, because of retaliation, but there are those that are just abusive to their men. Whether the man is humble by her nature, by his nature, and I take an advantage of that. If we say, if this institution we are saying we want to, the last one is that you have been silent on opportunistic, because people die because of opportunistic diseases, which TB is one of them. Meningitis, and in the non-communicable diseases, which are those, if I have been HIV, I'm diagnosed HIV positive, I'm making an example, and I develop some of what that, is that true? As researchers, you must look into that. What is also coming into my mind, which you have not been talking about, the side effects of ART. Some of people that are using HIV, some are disfigured.
Mm.
What is it? Assist us. And therefore, this pill, which is, what does it have side effects? And if they are, how the impact of it to when people were taking AIDS. I'm a health activist that believes that it's about time that as people that are in the legislative arm of the state, we must talk about these things so that people, because we are to ensure that the legislation assists. Honorable Maisela is very passionate about nutrition. Very passionate about, I'm just making an example. We must unpack what do people understand about nutrition? Do we subject, because nutrition is not being able to have food, but it's also about abusing food, and it's also about taking things that are not supposed to be. And in my parting shot is that, for instance, I always say, it will be difficult for me to tell a mother who is trying to make ends meet, doing fat cakes and fish. You know for a fact that if you reuse oil, it's toxic. But you can't go and tell that woman that, no, you must use oil once. So you are in a space that try and give us, so that when we go and talk and empower our people, we know. So that is the expectation that we are having from you. Don't try and give us an impression that it is this community, it is this race, it is this. Say it, that this is, because I'm of the view that you are also to go to those mutualists that are not only in New Brighton, but in Summerstrand, in Cape Town, the in the and be told, so that we are able, because we are a country that is, in my view, I'm subject to correction, that is living under an impression that it's a particular race that is doing things, it's a particular race that is subject, whereas all of us, when we cut, blood that comes up there is the same. And it then means everybody. So anything and everything that we do. So these issues that we are raising, when you come back, you must, because we are in the social cluster as health, which then it to look into the broader things which affects every human being, irrespective of color, creed, or race. And I do at some time I will write you a letter, because there's information that I think is for, it will then be for the benefit. There are other areas where we said don't respond to them now. The breakdown in communities, that in towns that you have visited, so that we know. I must not sit here. You said PE. Maybe you went and you have done a research in my community. I'm not aware of, because it's PE. PE is broader, very broad. It's a town from Motherwell to Summerstrand to Seaview. I'm just trying to give. It's only that we don't have time. We must, Honourable Ndaba.
Yeah, Chair, I think I'm triggered by your question in terms of whether they have done a research on the side effects of ARVs that causes disfigured in some of the people who are taking them. Like, for instance, here, you know, there's one thing that I've observed. Most of the women that I know who are HIV positive taking ARVs, they end up having breast cancer or cervical cancer. And this thing has been worrying me for a long time, because I sometimes when I'm alone, I think about these things, which what could be the problem. So maybe sometimes I tell myself that maybe these are some of the side effects, because the rate of women who are having breast cancer now of late, remember, especially amongst black people, this was not one of our disease, if I may say. It was mostly on white communities. But now of late, it's it's escalating even to the black communities, and which is worrisome to us. I'm sure next time, Chair, if we can give them an opportunity to do, whether they have done a research, or maybe if they can do some research, because, Shepherdson, this is worrisome. Even young girls now of late are experiencing that. So you can see what something is not right somewhere. And next time, if maybe they can digest it and think of if there's a possibility of them doing a research for us in terms of those side effects, just take women who are taking ARV tablets and check what are the side effects and what causes a higher rate of cancer now of late.
I think when you will then be coming back next year, when we will again, because we want to give you more time, digest some of the things that we have said, come back, but please, my humble request, try to, and this is the second time I'm making this plea, simplify your research. Please. When I'm saying simplify, it does not mean that we don't understand, but this is not only for us, this is for our communities, our constituency areas, our colleagues who may not have expertise in the sector. Now, when it's so highly technical, I know, my apologies, that's how you have been trained, but please try and make it reader friendly for an ordinary person. Having said that, thank you very much. whatever information that you have needed, we have requested. You will you do have Yoka's Ms. Matalamba's number and email address. You will forward it to. Thank you very much, honourable members. Our meeting stand adjourned. It was quite a very interesting day. Come again. Okay, can members please remain for housekeeping? That's for two minutes. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. We have got two invitations. Remember that at some point we did circulate a memo of the joint meetings of both a portfolio committee on basic education. Now we have got this one is on the 14th, which is next week. Committee room, it will still be confirmed. It's basic education, social development, it's health again, on learner pregnancy. So I think it's going to be very important. We will then request the committee section to try and get some documents for us from the department, from both this communicate with this department, so that when comrades, when members go to the meetings, there are documents there. We received documents, and I will humbly request members to please attend, because I attended the last one. It was quite informative on early childhood development. We are also invited by agriculture on the same day. I don't know how we're going to deal with this, whether we divide ourselves, but you circulate. So it's hereby invited both for Comrade to be part of the meeting, which is going to be discussing national food and nutrition policy implementation plan. So I think it was the same day, more or less same time. It will then be important that either we see how we divide ourselves to both, because both of those meetings are important to our sector. I think that's all, Comrade. You are now being given the same invite, so that you are then able to familiarize yourself. I will request the committee section.